Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome, everyone, to another very special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. We're here at episode 115, and I know it's episode 115 because I got wrecked on the last one, so I'm not going to forget this one.
Are you sure?
Yeah. That was one of those moments, you know, when you listen to it later, and that shit was hilarious, but at the time, I was just trying to get through it as fast as possible.
Got T-wrecked.
Correct. Oh, shit. So we only got two co-hosts here. I only got Jason and Corbin.
What do you mean only?
Hey, you guys are not the talent, Jason. You're definitely
That's
not.
That's true. Most podcasts would aspire to this level of competency just from the three of us.
See, on the money draft, you know, you are the talent there. But, you know, on this docket over here, you're just, you know, third ringer.
That's right. You got to come correct when it's Brainstorm Brewery time. There's a... When we're running a skeleton crew like this, we all got to contribute. So I'm looking forward to the cons of Tarkir set review. Hey.
The set review is our favorite part of any new set coming out, right, guys?
That doesn't sound the least bit believable.
Oh.
My God. Even I don't believe what I'm saying. We do the set review as a service to our listeners because there's a lot of information people want. And you know what? It makes us better financiers. Because we've got to really think about the information that we're conveying, and we got to think about, got to anticipate everything people are going to want to know. So this is a good exercise for us, and we think you guys will find it valuable as well.
No, I mean, I'm for sure glad that we do it. Actually, I feel like I have anticipated cards better since we started like making ourselves do these every set. So I'm glad we do them. You know, just at some point you've started enough cards and your brain hurts. So let's just jump right in.
That said, it does feel like going to the dentist.
Yes, indeed. Like every time it's pulling teeth and you gotta do what you gotta do.
Hey, let's do it. And what we have to talk about is, I'm going to start with this card and I don't even know how to say it, but I assume it's Anafenza, the foremost.
Yep. This is the Abzan, con for Abzan and it's a 4/4 and
4/4 for three mana.
We're not going to read all this. Yeah, for 4/4 for three mana is going to be the big thing. Like in this format, you know, 4/4s are basically the baseline. And you know, you got the 4/5s and then you're going to have 5/5 Palookanos at the top of the chain and then everything else in between.
So, I mean, it's an $8 pre-order right now. What do you guys think about it at that price?
I think it's a little high.
I don't think there's much upside. I think that might be about where it shakes out. But it's going to be – my math is thrown off a little bit by the fact that this is going to be the most opened Magic set ever. But I think Anafenza has a lot it can do. I don't know how good it's going to be in EDH, but I suspect it could impact Standard, especially if there's a Dredge deck because it really shuts that down pretty well. And also Anafenza is like a good random like one of in pod in Modern also because you can pod into this pretty easily. There's a lot of 2-drops you can sack, and you know this can really wreck their strategy. So – I see this kind of having a pretty broad appeal, but man, even if it gets played a lot, I don't think you'll be glad you bought it in $8 because there's going to be so much of the set opened.
Well, the way I kind of look at this is like when you have these really difficult to cast cards, you know, the all three colors and it's a 3-drop and, you know, for a 3-drop, it's obviously great. A 4/4 with two relevant abilities. The issue is given the first ability, the second ability great is if it's the silver bullet or whatever, but the first ability, you know, when it attacks, you put a counter on a tapped creature. That means you want to be attacking a bunch, obviously. So you want you to be playing a very, aggressive deck. The issue with that is that, you know, it's three colors and it's not easy to cast. So you kind of, if this was a control card, then the fact that it had three distinct mana symbols wouldn't be so bad. But like when you're trying to play an aggressive deck, every time that you do not cast these cards on curve, they become, you know, very much worse. So You know, this is a card that already wants you to be attacking with creatures by the time it attacks on turn four, assuming you play it on time. So you have to do yourself a ton of damage to even play this card, at which point you may be better served, if you're trying to play this aggressive deck, to just play one of the one or two color options that don't kill themselves. So yeah, I don't see a lot of upside at $8 either.
Yeah, there's talk of this card actually seeing play in Vintage because of the thing. But as far as in Standard, yeah, I don't think it's going to be seeing play as much. Maybe later on down the line when we get the enemy fetches and it becomes easier to cast. But as is this too hard and painful? And the deck that's an Outlast deck, I've been playing on the beta. There's an Outlast deck, and this is not part of it. It's more of a two-color white splashing green because most of the good Outlast cards are in those colors. And going into black is just not worth it. And then when you got the Abzan control deck or the mid-range deck, this card doesn't play into it either because they're playing coursers. And they're trying to get to the siege rhino, and they're playing a lot more control cards. And this is I don't see this card being played, so I think it's going to definitely drop down. It's going to be a player maybe later on, but right at first, it's not going to be have a home for this card.
See, I think it's really interesting to say like that because I'm pretty sure that none of those things you just named are actually going to be decks.
Very positive they are. I mean the Outlast is less likely. That's going to be more tier two if that can make it. But the Abzan control is completely. That's going to be the top deck. It's all over the beta. Like it's shutting down shop.
Yeah. I mean, it's a, like I said, the mid range control deck, basically the shells from the block pro tour make a lot of sense. But yeah, I mean, like I said, every time people see something linear like Outlast, they try to put together a deck for it and it just is never as good as just playing the most powerful cards in the format. So
it's actually really good. You got a Johnny, the Steadfast, and you got the other Johnny, and putting the Outlast counters on there. You got First Strike with just having one Outlast counter and then the one that gives your entire team flying. Like it's a lot more powerful than people think it is. And
yeah, I mean, we'll see where we're at in, you know, a month. So
all right. So next
we
card
can't
we got
spend
is,
this much time on every card.
No. So next card is Ash Cloud Phoenix. This is a four colored two colorless and two red for a 4/1 Phoenix flying that when it dies, it returns face down as a morph creature. You could morph it for six. It's at $3.
Pre-order this for $3 if you want to lose $2.75.
Yeah, it's whatever. It's just another Phoenix.
I've seen lists about it that people were talking about this card as being a player.
People said that about the Journey into Next Phoenix. And that's
people say that about every, I mean.
Yeah, but it's a 2-for-1. At least at the bare minimum, you kill it. It's a you got a 4 toughness, which the 4 toughness is very. I mean, the 4 power is very ferocious, and you want to play it into those decks. It has a place, and it's still a 2-for-1. You kill it, then you can play it. So I don't know if it's going to be. I think like $3 is like probably right for it. It might be like a $3 to $4 card, but I don't think it's going to be a bulk.
It can't. It's very unlikely to see standard play, and this set has so much value packed in. It's going to be open so much. You're just not going to be able to have these $3 to $5 cards. Stuff is either going to be expensive or it's going to be very cheap. So let's move on. Next one. This is the big one. Clever Impersonator, the 4-mana clone that clones any non-land permanent at $15 right now. What do you guys think?
I don't like it at 15.
I don't. It's so hard to know because I'm trying to factor the fact that so much of the set's going to be opened. And I don't know that it'll be a 4-of in the decks that play it. Some people are saying, yeah, it's going to be a 4-of, but I don't really know. I think someone would have to go really wrong for you to be upset that you didn't pay $15 for this guy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this card ends up like $8 to $10 at least, maybe a little cheaper. Like maybe not in a month, maybe not even in 3 months, but 9 months from now, 6 months from now, like this card isn't going to be $15.
It's very good. I just don't know if it's 4-of in multiple decks and multiple formats good. And with this not being a set with a lot of bad cards in it, you know, like we have with Voice of Resurgence, I don't really see this ending up $40 and everybody being like, shit, why didn't I pay 15?
Yeah.
I just don't think that's going to happen here.
Exactly.
I think it should be 8 to 10. It is going to be played a lot of cubes, but the foils are going to be the one that people
yeah,
want to pick
I
up.
Mean, foils of this will be insane. If you can get them for 30, I think you'll be happy with that.
But this will be a standard player at some point, at some level.
Oh, absolutely.
So this other one that I think is actually going to be a standard player is Empty the Pits.
Now, weren't you pretty down on this card when we first talked about it, Marcel? What changed your mind?
Playing with it is actually pretty decent. When the Delve deck, I've been trying to build a Delve deck, and I'm pretty sure I built it incorrectly. but you can get a lot of cards into the graveyard pretty quickly. And this is the best card to cast in a Delve deck, period. Like, all the other cards they're okay, but like, when you want to get stuff out of your graveyard, you want to end the game, this closes the door. And because it's instant, like, it plays around a lot of their potentials to stop the card. They gotta either have counter spells or, you know, either it's very hard for them to beat this card. So I think this card will be seeing play. I don't think you want more than two of in any deck.
No, no way you want more than two of them.
Okay, so it's pre-ordering for five on SCG. It's a little cheaper elsewhere.
This is a card that could, you know, like I said, I see the most relevant use for this being in, like, the control mirror. You bring in one, maybe two of them, and it really does, you know, 15, 20 turns into the game represent an instant speed I win card. And, you know, that's obviously something extremely rare. So, you know, that's kind of the role I see it in. So it's possible at the Pro Tour it does well. Maybe it spikes to $10 or something as people get excited about it. But again, there's no way this doesn't end up $2-$3 just like Army of the Damned.
I think you're safe getting them at four. If you're going to play with it, pick up two at four to five. I don't think you'll be mad. I don't think you're going to lose any money by that. And the potential for it to go up higher will be there, especially, you know, after, I mean, that could be after rotation, but I don't think it's going to dip down. Once you can see it winning some games and winning decks, it's not going to be a $2 or $3 card.
I will see, man. Aetherling won a whole bunch of games and was a $2 or $3 card. And this fills the same role.
You know what's not a $3 card?
Hooded Hydra. Yeah, I like this card.
Now, I haven't really seen many pre-sales on foils of this, but if you can get a foil for under $10, you absolutely do it. Like, this is an EDH All-Star. We're thinking it could probably impact Standard. This is one of the best Hydras they've printed. It's so good. And with cards like Doubling Season, where you're doubling the number of counters you put on it, and when it dies, you double the amount of snakes you get. So you're basically, you know, getting quadruple your investment in 1/1s. That could be real relevant. As a Varel player, like, Hooded Hydra makes me salivate. It's one of the better Hydras they've printed, and it seems real underrated. So I'm not prepared to say you want to, like, order a bunch of non-foils at $3, because it would have to really impact Standard for that, but I am saying I would be aggressive about getting foils under 10.
Okay. At $3 for just a standard card, do you think this is going to...
Well, if you can get, like, a $10 playset on eBay, that seems fine. I just, I really don't know what Standard's going to look like if this is trying to fill the same role as Pelucranos, and Pelucranos kind of fills that role better. Hydra's typically... Colonian Hydra got a little bit of play, but Hydras typically don't get played in Standard, and Chasm Skulker hasn't really materialized the way we thought it would. And those Chasm Skulker tokens are a little bit better, even though it's slower to crank that up. So this may be a card that they don't want to kill, and that could be something that's, this could replace Mistcutter, I guess. Although Mistcutter was more of a sideboard card. I'm not prepared to say what this is going to do in Standard.
I don't think this is going to do anything in Standard. I think Pelucranos is better in most decks. Mistcutter was most relevant for the haste and protection from blue and can't be countered. Nothing else.
Yeah, exactly.
The only way this does anything is if the mono green make a whole bunch of mana deck is good. But even then, like, it's just gonna, like I said, there's gonna be so much of this open. If the card is $3 now, it is extremely unlikely that it is more than $3, some few months from now.
Yeah, Rabblemaster was like a buck pre-order, so you never.
Rabblemaster was for Magic 2015, which nobody cared to open. And this is going to be the most open set.
That is very true. So, I would just target the foils of this. And I don't know, you're going to probably end up with a lot of the non-foils just as a matter of course. So we can move on to Narset Enlightened Master, which I like as a card and do not like as a $6 pre-order.
Oh, not at all. Yeah. If anything's going to drop,
cool,
it's going to be this one.
Well, yeah, for sure.
Well, Pearl, like
this is an EDH. It's only useful in EDH, so you don't want to pay $6 for a non-foil. And Marcel was already, like, he's moved on. He's mentally doesn't care about Narset anymore. I don't know what I like for the foils on Narset, as long as we're talking about how it's an EDH card. I think if you can get them under 15, do it.
Jason, I feel like there's a lot of, this is an EDH, something's gotta not be an EDH card, right?
Man, look at this set. This set's very good for EDH. It seems like they're not making stuff for Legacy anymore, and they're making stuff for those kind of formats. Because I guess EDH players are the ones buying boosters at Walmart. I'm not really sure.
Someone on beta actually had a Narset standard deck, so it's not impossible.
It doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything, but it's not completely crap. So I'll just say I'll give it that much. I don't think it's worth $6, but it's not worth $6, but I'm just saying people, someone built a deck around this card and played it.
This is the card that EDH players are most excited about. Like, it's this and Hardened Scales out of the whole set. Like, the most decks I've seen brewed were based on Narset. So, like, if you can get foils under 15, I think you do it. Like, I think this is a $30, $40 foil in the next year.
Wow. So Pearl Lake Ancient is just going to probably continue to stay bulk as long as it's around.
It's all the bulk.
This doesn't even seem like a mythic card to me. But
I don't think anyone's going to want to do what this card does. That's the problem.
Which is maybe sort of nothing. Like, it doesn't do anything. It's just going to be bulk.
I don't know what...
another big dumb creature. And in this case, it has flash and can't be countered and is still smaller than everything else with 7 mana.
So Sarkhan, the Dragon Speaker. This is
Here's one to talk about.
$25. And the constant debate, is it going to be stronger Dragon? Is it going to be Sarkhan? And they each have their upsides and their downsides, and I think it's not as easy as people think it out to be. I mean, Stormbreath Dragon has less things that a dais does, but it sort of is Sarkhan. Sarkhan could take out a Stormbreath Dragon. It wins that battle if you play him second. There's like, Sarkhan has a control aspects, and you play it in a different type of deck. And with the other Planeswalkers, and you play it with, like Xenagos, you can have a pretty powerful deck. There's definitely a deck here, so.
There's definitely the makings of like that Jund or Red White Green Super Friends deck, just like at the Block Pro Tour where you had basically you take the deck that had, Xenagos and Elspeth and, you know, all the mana creatures and the Pelucranos, and you add a 5-drop Planeswalker to it. And then, you know, you have Garrick if you splash black. Like, the makings of that Super Friends Jund deck are, like, already there. Maybe you don't play the black, maybe you play the Elspeth. So I can definitely, when you talk about that, like, that's where the minus ability on it's really good. Plus, it serves as, like, a finisher or, you know, a way to pressure other people's Planeswalkers if you played in that deck. I think that's the deck that will want this. The other ones may want Stormbreath. I'm not sure.
So what do we think about $25 on this guy?
I think that's right.
Like, yeah, it probably is. I don't know, because saw what happened with Elspeth.
Yeah, initially in the start, like, he's going to see play. He's going to see tournament play. He's going to be in the Pro Tour. He is going to be played in the Pro Tour.
True.
He's going to be a $40 card before he comes down. He'll come down eventually, but before that happens, he'll probably be a $40 card.
I mean, so look at the two Planeswalkers that we have to compare to. Jace from Return to Ravnica topped out at 25 when it was taking over standard rotation last year. 25 was its high point. Elspeth went to, I think, 35 a year ago and is now about 20. I think Elspeth is a lot more dominant than Sarkhan, since Elspeth, like, literally was the linchpin that the entire block format revolved around. So I don't see Sarkhan being that strong. I don't see it holding Elspeth numbers.
But Elspeth wasn't a standard card. This is a standard card. Elspeth was not.
Elspeth's not a standard card?
It was barely, I mean, it was there, but it was not like, it wasn't a linchpin. It was in Esper. You might play two. You might play a two of an Esper. At the beginning, you had mono black, you had mono blue. It was not played more than a two of in decks after the Pro Tour. For the initial part of standard, it was there, but it was not a
side card. You're saying the Sarkhan could be a four of.
It could be a four of. It's definitely going to be played as a three of. It's going to be played definitely more than Elspeth.
What I was referring to was block.
The block Pro Tour didn't happen until later on in the season.
No, I understand that. I'm saying it dominated block, and that's a very good indication of the next standard. Jace completely dominated standard for several months and topped out.
This was in a precon though. When it was 25, it was in a precon.
Yeah, when it was 25, 6 months later. No, it wasn't even in a precon when it was 25. It was in a precon when it was down to 15. It was several months at $25 right after rotation. Okay, so like that's one comparison point for a first set Planeswalker. And then the other one we had to look at is Elspeth, which is 20. So if you think Sarkhan is going to be more played than Elspeth, maybe a little more than 20 is right. However, Jace basically was all the things that you're making Sarkhan out to be, and it topped out at 25.
Initially, Jace was not – I mean, it got played.
No, I understand that. I'm telling you, at its peak, when it was dominating standard, it was $25. So, like, that is
a – there's probably not a lot of upside to buying at 25. If you wanted to play with, you know, there's a risk you could pay more than 25 in the short term. But as an investment, I really don't like this at 25. Like, I think that's what people want to know.
I think you're right. It could spike. Like, it could, become a $35 card at the Pro Tour, maybe 40. But 6 months from now, it's a lot more likely to be closer to 20 than it is to 40.
Yeah, but people could pick them up now at 20 to 25 and then flip them when the spikes get out and then buy back.
I guess, man. That's a lot of money to sink into.
Yeah, I'm not betting $100 that I can make 10.
Yeah. All right. That's a lot of money to sink into something in the hopes that it rises 30%.
I mean, but nobody's really buying them for $25. So. I mean,
people. What are they selling them at either? You know, it's like it's the same thing.
Yep. So, Planeswalkers are always going to have that Jace tax, and this is no exception. I think this is a little harder to evaluate than Sorin when we get to that. I think that's a little more cut and dried.
Yeah.
But I think let's talk about the card I'm actually probably most excited about out of the set, which is a CD Unwritten, which I don't know if it will impact Standard at all, but in EDH, this card's nuts. I don't know if I want to pay 5, though. I'm probably going to trade for it, but I don't think I'm in for 5 cash.
See, I actually think that this could be a Standard playable card, similar to how Summoning Trap was. You know, I think, you know, everything said, especially when you consider the context of the format it was in, Summoning Trap is better than this, but I do think it could get played. That said, $5 is probably too much.
Yeah, 5 seems a little high. I've been trying to jam this card. I have not seen anybody else jamming this card on beta. I put it in a teamer deck, and it, like, You play this on 6, and all of a sudden you get a Storm Breath Dragon, a Pelucranosa that comes on the board. It looks sick. So I think, you know, once people start brewing with this, this card will see play in Standard.
It's
way too powerful.
Yeah, I'm most interested to see it. You know, if you look at the block format, you know, the Reanimator decks didn't, you know, dominate the Pro Tour, but up until that point, they were a major player in, Moto results. So if you take those decks, you add green, which is, you know, nearly trivial to do since they were like mono black or black splash, a second color before. And you get to add this and it fills your graveyard while giving you something. I think that like then you start having some redundancy with your whip and your Rescue from the Underworld and your See the Unwritten. And then I think you're looking at something like that's the shell I could see it seeing play in.
It's way too powerful not to see play in the right. It just needs someone to work with it. But 5, I think you're safe not picking them up. Now, Sidisi, the Blood Tyrant, this is a card I was very excited about, and after playing with it, I'm less excited about it.
Good. I'm glad I pooped on it.
The main, I still think it's powerful, and I don't think, when you get a Dredge creature deck with maybe like Night Howler, and you get some deck like that, that this may see play there, and it may actually be pretty good, but the downside is when you cast this card, it's a high target. So you can cast it. Its ability goes on the stack. Someone could respond with a lightning strike or any kind of removal spell. And then when you mill the 3 cards, you don't get the additional zombie. So that happened way too often when I casted this card that I see that being just like a problem.
And I think that's one of many problems. I mean, you're working hard to get your colors, right? To pay 4 mana and hopefully get a 3/3 and a 2/2. You could alternatively pay 4 mana without stretching your mana base, get a Pelucranos, and then on your next turn, eat the Sidisi and the 2/2.
But when you dredge, like you're attacking, you get 6 dredge cards and 6 in the graveyard, like being able to delve out, you know, the kill creature spell. I can't remember the strike.
Yeah.
That's going to be played a lot. That's going to be a player in Standard.
I mean, that card is for sure a card.
It's a 1 mana conditionless Doomblade. It's amazing.
But like I said, I think that card is good because it rewards you for playing Magic and then you have cards in your graveyard to make it really good. I don't think you have to go out of your way with cards like Sidisi that stretch your mana base and, underwhelming.
You keep saying you're working super hard, but like you're not saying that in any color that does involve green. Like, you're not working super hard to cast stuff if one of your colors is green.
It depends. Like, you're going to be playing with a lot of scry lands, right? And you're going to be playing with a lot of tricolor lands if you're playing stuff like this. Like, it's not – you don't always have this perfect turn 2 untapped land into Caryatid into turn 3 untapped land, play this guy. Like, I mean, sometimes your fourth lane will come down tapped, and then you're looking at doing this on turn 5 when someone else is casting a Stormbreath Dragon.
I hear you.
Yeah. And yeah, so $5, I think it's going to drop down before it goes up, but it's still a powerful card. I don't think you should completely discount it. And Soren, the Solemn Visitor, you guys just don't like this card at all?
not at 15.
No way.
I've seen people play with it. It's a powerful card. I think it could hold 10 to 12. And
no
maybe,
way.
Maybe, yes. It's actually, I think you guys are.
I mean, bad planeswalkers are 5.
This is not a bad planeswalker. It is not.
Maybe 10? Maybe? Like, bad planeswalkers are 5. So let's.
Old Soren was good.
Old Soren was good.
And was $5.
He was $15.
Well,
he was 5 after he was in
after,
Precon.
After the reprint. I mean, he was 15 and played more. And we've all universally said that this isn't going to be that good.
Nope.
So.
Plus, they're like
seeing it in play. When you got a deck that supports it, it's a lot better.
There's some magical Christmas land stuff.
It's not magical Christmas land. Like I've played people that are playing with these cards. There's an absent control deck that a mid range that uses this card with it, and it was very powerful. It shuts down a few things going on. The card's not bad. I'll just put it like that. With it's not going to be a $5 card. It's going to be a $10 to $12 card.
I'm coming in thinking lower than that. I mean, and if we're going to compare to the old Soren, which was out of Dark Ascension, which had relatively few value cards, you have to keep in mind we are talking about the most open set of Magic's history in Khanza Tarkir that is going to have 5 $15 cards at the rare mark. Like, there can only be so much value in this set, and we can't have a bunch of $15 mythics on top of $15 fetch lands on top of $2 to $3 empty the pits. Like, the numbers do not add up.
Yeah, you have Sarkhan, you got Soren. Those are the.
I know what they're doing. They're keeping the price of the cards high by making Moto so fucking miserable to play that no one's going to do any redemption, and that'll piss up.
All right.
Next one, Suric Dragonclaw.
What in the actual F? How is this 15?
Card? Well, this card is actually kind of insane, right? Flash can't be countered. Creature spells you control can't be countered. Other creatures have trample, and it's a 6/6 for 5 mana.
It's a 6/6 that it doesn't itself trample. I don't know, man. Like, I think I've been colored by how disappointed I was that this is the team Archon. Because I was talking to our writer Jim Casale, and he was saying that he really thought it would be a Fight Titan. Like, he just made that up, but still, like, if this were, like, comes into play and fights a dude, kind of like Girl Rage Beast, but when he attacks, he fights a dude or something like that. Like, I wasn't expecting, like, Gaea's Herald plus, like, I don't know. It just seems like a weird amalgam of abilities.
That's true.
And why is it $15 when Anafenza is 8?
Well, yeah, I think the deck, they want to do different things. They want to play Stormbreath. They want to play Sarkhan more than they probably want to play this card. This card may see a 1 or 2 of. Just to give the trample. I mean, you got Plukernos to trample. You got the Knuckle Blade with trample. That becomes a lot better card. So he has some play, but $15 is ridiculous. This is going to be like a $5 card.
I think of some of these, you know, borderline cards that we've talked about, this is more playable because it has such insane stats. Can't be like, you're just guaranteed to resolve this at the end of your opponent's turn. And it's a 6/6 for 5. 15 is clearly high, but I think this is more powerful than some of the other cards we've talked about.
I bet it ends up at about $5.
Well, I mean, so we think it'll see some play then, right?
But you're not going to – I don't think you want more than 2 of in decks. I think the decks like,
– The 5-drop spot is certainly crowded in decks playing red. That's for sure.
It's extremely crowded. So, like, they're going to try to play some balance, and I think he's going to play – he is not going to be never a 4 of.
He's probably this card that either sits in the sideboard or comes in, you know, when there's blue decks around. Cause like, keep in mind that if blue decks become good, you have a deck that can play this at the end of their turn and then untap and cast a Mistcutter Hydra.
Like, just wreck them. Yeah, just wreck.
Well, and counter spells are better now because we're losing a cycle of uncounterable cards.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
But people are playing less counter spells.
But 15 is certainly high. So, all right.
It's 11 on eBay, and I don't want to pay 11.
So, next one. Now, here's an awesome card. Ugin's Nexus, 5 mana. It's a legendary artifact where people cannot take extra turns. And if it would be put into a graveyard from battlefield, instead exile it and take an extra turn yourself. It is $3 pre-order. What do you guys think?
think people are undervaluing it, and it may drop some more, but I think you should pick some up when it does drop.
To me, this is the card that dips down very low, simply because of, you know, it probably won't make as flash and standard. It's not flashy necessarily with everything else in the set. There's going to be a lot opened, and it'll drop down, and it's going to be real cheap. But this is one of those cards that in several years, the regular copies are going to be $5 or more.
I think there may be in the later sets, there may be something that be allowed this. I mean, this is a central figure of the entire storyline. There's got to be something. It's kind of like, you know, when they had the Eye of Ugin, or the land that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, eventually there's a card that untaps it and it turns from a $2-3 card to, you know, $4-6 card.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It may not ever get there in standard at all. And that's fine because it's nuts in EDH. Like I'll get on the nuts in EDH bandwagon with this thing.
Brian DeMars, he said this is like the third card, that would impact, vintage out of the set.
Yeah. I could see that because it's take an extra turn.
Yeah.
So
also stops people from comboing you out with Time Vault.
Yeah, like that first clause is actually super relevant in Vintage.
And that's why I think it's good in EDH too. All right, so Wingmake Rock is our next one. 3/4, this is the Broodmate Dragon-ish card we talked about a couple weeks ago. $8 pre-order for the 3/4 that gives you a 3/4 when it comes into play if you rated.
I don't think it's going to hold the $8. I think there's other cards better than this, but I still think it's a good card. But that 3/4 is just
I liked it more when I had seen less of the set.
Yeah, it's like... I think what this format is going to look like, at least early, is people taking the decks that were good in block, that being, you know, the red-green Let's Play Xenagos and Elspeth deck, and they get Sarkhan now. And then you've got the bug or, you know, whatever colors they end up being, that's your basic Courser Caryatid Prognostic Sphinx engine. So if we're looking at it in that sense and we compare Wingmake Rock to that, you know, it comes in pretty lacking compared to Prognostic Sphinx. So,
and, like, playing 5-mana Dirtly Flyers is not what you want to be doing in Mardu, if that's where this ends up. Like, it just... I don't know, man.
I think
maybe
it's
some
okay.
sort of Jeskai type deck. I think it needs a deck, and I don't think it has it. Like, now that I've seen more of the set, I like it a lot less.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that said, it does, like... One of them is better than one Prognostic Sphinx in theory. I don't know if being able to attack through it is better than, you know, them getting the scries when they crack back. I don't know. It's a card I could both see spiking at the Pro Tour if people decide that this is the finisher, or it's a card I could see doing nothing and dropping down to $2-3, you know, like, I think it just really depends on how the format shakes out.
Yeah, I hear you.
I don't
it really
like
depends.
Paying $8 for it. If I had to gamble my own money on whether this is going to go up at the Pro Tour, I'm not going to buy any Wingmate Rock Lotto tickets.
Yeah.
All right. What about Zergo, the Helm Smasher?
Oh,
stay away from this. There's a foil in the precon. Like, if you set foils of this might be good, and, you know, that precon foil. But, like, this is an EDH card, as far as I'm concerned, and, like, you don't want EDH non-foils. You especially don't want to pay $3 for it. Because when people ask me what I think about EDH non-foils, I look at Deadeye Navigator, which is in every blue deck and is bannable in EDH, and it's 81 cents. Like, if Deadeye Navigator is 81 cents as a non-foil, I don't like, you know, recent set EDH cards, you know, non-foils. So, I'm not super excited about paying $3 for a non-foil of this at all.
All right. So, moving on. There's your mythics. Let's move on to the rares then.
So wait, what are your top three mythics? What do you think out of the set?
My top three mythics are Hooded Hydra, See the Unwritten, and probably Ugin's Nexus.
Are we talking about in terms of, opportunity financially to get into right now?
Yes.
Yeah, that was just kind of like, yeah.
I mean, in that case, you know, I think I agree. I think See the Unwritten could be a player. I think that the Hydra and the Ugin's Nexus are good long-term pickups, but they need to drop first. You know, Clever Impersonator 15 is certainly a card you want to have because people will want it from you, you know, but like you don't buy them. You trade for them and you trade them out immediately, just to move them. So like that's a card I want to pick up at the pre-release because I think that $15 price will hold or go up in the first month. I just don't think long-term it'll be there.
Yeah, that seems about right.
Yeah, short term, I'm going to say Sarkhan. He's going to probably be $40, and if you get him for $20, you could double your money and get rid of him. I guess see them written. I do like that card, and but still $5. I think it's going to come down before you have to buy it. Ugin's Nexus, though. Definitely Ugin's Nexus. But still, again, that's going to come down before you
get it. Yeah, it's all going to come. I mean, that's the mythics. Very, very rarely do you find an underpriced mythic.
Yeah. All right, well, let's jump to the rares then.
So, you know, before we get going, I would say there's a lot of cards here that we're going to go through and we're going to like, and they're going to be $2 right now. But like I said, just the way, if you go back and look at Theros cards, a lot of playable rares are bulk or near bulk. And a lot of these cards we look at and say, oh, this is cool, are going to be the same way in 6 months, even if they see some play. This will be open less than Theros. I mean, it'll be open more in the first 3 months than Theros, but over its lifetime, it will be open less. So that does, you know, give some more upside a year from now. But 3 months from now, these cards will all be tanking and bottomed out because people have been opening them straight for 3 months.
And December is going to be abysmal. So get your cards in December if you can wait for it.
Exactly.
Yep.
So let's dig in. Abzan Ascendancy.
This is bulk.
Bulk rare.
Altar of the Brood.
This is got real potential, but I think it'll take a while to crack, so it'll probably hit bulk first.
Yeah, as well as for sure be bulk. It's also one of those cards that, I mean, I don't know, there was some fringe deck that it's all playing, it would probably be a 4 of, because if you want this effect, you want all of this effect, but yeah, it'll be bulk.
Yeah, what about EDH? Like, if you had a deck built around this, yeah. I think that's probably the only
thing. You don't mill people in EDH.
Oh, like, it's each opponent, yeah.
It's 100 card.
But if you enter the play, you got like that dragon that comes in and drops all those guys?
No, the only way you mill people is if you're milling them all the way at once.
I see. Okay. All right. Ankle Shanker.
Ankle Shanker.
I like this card.
I bet Ankle Shanker is in the event deck.
Yes.
Like the event deck is Mardu. Like I bet there's an Ankle Shanker 2 in there. Like
This card's insane, but it's going to be bulk. Like, it's 5 mana for a 2/2.
I mean, but the thing is, though, they got so many of these tokens, and all of a sudden, you can't block none of the tokens.
Well, yeah, unless you were to, you know, Lightning Strike the Ankle Shaker.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And you no counter spells and whatever.
I mean, it costs, it's a 5 mana thing that dice everything.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane effect.
Yeah. It's a bulk rare. Like,
it's a bulk rare. Yeah.
It's just more powerful things to do. I mean, there's a lot of stuff we talk about is, you know, cute themed, but in all likelihood will just be worse than playing Caryatid, Courser, Xenagos, Sphinx, you know.
But I just remember that the guy with Double Strike and Heroic from Theros is a bulk rare. So anytime I'd see something that I like, but like less than that, that's kind of...
Yeah. All right. Avalanche Tusker.
Bulk.
Bulk-soaked Champion.
Oh,
now,
like
this is
card.
Not bulk sold at the moment. Sold out at $5. It's the 1 mana 2/1 in black. Raid, you can return for 2 mana, return from your graveyard to the battlefield if you attacked with a creature this turn, and it can't block. Mono black aggro is really a deck in block, and if people want to go all out with the aggro plan, they now have another 2-mana 2-power 1-drop.
And then also, if you're going to play with the Butcher in your Mardu deck, this guy is the best friend of the Butcher. Yeah, so like this card, $5 seems a little high. I'm sad to see it there, but I think it may hold that price.
Gravecrawler hit 10, Geralt's Messenger hit 10.
Yeah,
from like a set that wasn't open very much, but yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. Like, I don't think this is going to hit 10, but like...
It'll hold 5.
Maybe 5 is about right.
Mono Black is 100% a real deck, and I don't know if this replaces the 1-drops they had. Or if it just becomes like another 1-drop in that deck and it's just really, really aggressive.
Insane. You attack with it and someone blocks it and you can activate its ability when it goes and dies into the graveyard. It replaces itself after attacking. Like he's just nuts. He's going to be a player throughout Standard.
Yeah, for sure. So I think $5 is probably long term where it will be, but this is a card that could go up in the interim.
And pick up foils because every cube is going to play this card. People that got cubes. So yes. This is definitely a player.
Next we got Bloodstained Mire, and I mean, we can just talk about all the fetch lands here.
They'll come down.
I mean, we've talked about them before. They'll come down.
They have to.
Yep. All right. Butcher of the Horde, it's $6. Marcel, you like this card?
This card is going to be a major player in Standard. This card is insane.
It's, the 4 mana Mardu colors, flying, sack a creature, give it vigilance haste or lifelink to end of turn.
$6 is right. $6 is a little high for me.
I think it's pretty high.
Yeah, 4 to 5.
Yeah, 4 to 5, but he's a player. Like, you're playing Mardu, you're playing this card.
This is the 4-drop that I want in that 3-color. Like, if you're making a 3-color aggressive deck, that deck is likely to be red and black. and play this card more so than it's likely to be green and whatever and play an Afinza. Like this is, yeah. I think it's probably expensive at $6, but I think this is going to be a player in standard at least a little bit.
It's the premier, it's the number one Mardu card.
The problem is all these cards are so narrow because of their colors. Like, you're not going to get played in a bunch of decks like Courser or Carry At It or something like that. So, like, you have to bear that in mind that, like, there aren't going to be a bunch of different decks that run Butcher the Horde. Like, there's going to be a Mardu deck or it's not going to get run.
True. That's so, very true.
Yeah, and that's like I said, like, when you, especially when you look at something like this in Anafinza, they have to be played in an aggressive deck. They are at their best if played an aggressive deck. And if you're not playing an aggressive deck, you should play a different card in their spot. So you have to have a deck that can make those colors on time and cast those cards on time. The issue is if you envision the mana base that does that, it's a bunch of fetch lands, it's a bunch of mana confluences, it's a bunch of pain lands. And then at some point, you're just worse than like a mono red deck because a mono red deck doesn't deal itself 8 damage over the course of a game.
Yeah, but,
you can give
guy
a life link.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to be second, you do just to mitigate that damage.
Yeah.
Like
that's a card in this theoretical deck. Yeah. Like,
no, it is a card in this deck. It's not theoretical.
No. That's what I'm saying. Like
Mardu Ascendancy, you attack with this guy. You give him haste. You sacrifice the creature. Mardu Ascendancy. You get a token. You sacrifice the token. He's got lifelink. It's a sequence that's going to see play in standard.
What I'm saying is, these decks have to be better. It's not that it's good or not good. It has to be better enough than like a mono red deck or a red black deck or a mono black aggro deck to justify dealing itself 8 damage over the course of a game. That's the point. It's not that it is or isn't good. It's that you have to have a reason to, cause you're making your matchup against all these other mono red and mono black decks worse by dealing yourself 8 damage. So like they have
you're
to,
you're not doing
8
damage a
better.
Turn. You're not doing 8 damage by the time you drop this guy on the board. So. Like,
it's not that. It's over the course of a game. If your mana base is made up of fetch lands, mana confluences, and pain lands, you are going to have a worse percentage against the decks that play swamp.
There are going to be 3-color decks. That you're saying that no one could play a 3-color deck, and I'd say that's completely
wrong. That's not even close to what I said. What I said is they have to be enough better.
You got Mardu. Okay. They are. There's going to be enough. You're going to have a Mardu deck, you're going to have an Azin deck, and you're going to have a Temur deck. And then after that, you'll figure it.
I don't like this price. I do like the next card that's going to be in the Mardu deck, which is Crackling Doom. I kind of wish I'd bought them at $1. I didn't really like it at first. I thought it was kind of dirtly, but people have been saying, hey, if you've been watching the Versus series on SCG, they've been really just smashing green creatures with this. Like, it seemed like every time Crackling Doom was cast, it won the game. Like, I think you can still get these for like under $3. I think that's probably where it ends up. Like I said, like, the card's powerful, but it's narrow. If this were just like 2 colors in black, it would be very expensive. But the fact that you're stuck in those colors, like, I think that really limits the upside on a lot of these cards. So, Crackling Doom is probably a $3 to $5 card. That's about what you can get it for now. So, like, I think if you could have gotten them for around $1, that might have been good. But I wasn't convinced at that point. And by the time, it was proved that this card was kind of the real deal, it was, too late because everybody else found out at that time. So I kind of guessed wrong on this card. I wish I'd gone deep at, like, 75 cents to $1, but I don't think there's any upside to buying in at about $3.
This would definitely fit in, this deck we're talking about because it gets the damage through, takes a blocker off the field. That's a pretty powerful combination right there.
And it's an edict that doesn't kill an Elvish Mystic or a Sylvan Caryatid. It kills a Pelucranos or a, Storm Breath Dragon or something. Mm-hmm. So, like,
it's an instant.
It's a real solid card.
And it's instant, so it can kill Sarkhan as well. So,
yeah.
That is true.
It's tough to,
All right. It's probably like the Mizzium.
It's tough to cast.
It's like the Mizzium Mortars price-wise, right? Where it always kind of fluctuated between like $2 and $4 depending on how much play it got. Like, that's kind of where I see it ending up, yeah.
Now, Crater's Claws, I've seen some deck lists with this, but I just don't understand why this, I don't see it in this card.
Seems real bulky.
Yeah.
Devil's Play is a bulk rare. It was a bulk rare when it was in standard too.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be more than a bulk rare, but I'm seeing deck lists with it. That's the weird part.
I just want you to remember that when we talk about whatever the next card you've seen in a deck list that's really good. Like, people are throwing everything at the wall right now to see what sticks. Crater's Claws will not be one of those.
Unfortunately, Deflecting Palm probably won't either. I want to like this card. I like that it's a fixed mana cost. I just, man, I don't know.
Nah, it's going to be bulk.
I want it to be good, and I think it's probably going to be bulk.
Yeah, it's going to be bulk. Bulk.
Okay. Here's one. Dig Through Time.
Bulk. Bulk. I don't think
it's
so.
It's like a non-bow with the rest of your...
Yeah.
Like, are you getting all those cards in your graveyard just so you can cast this and, like...
Nope.
Well, the reason I think it puts them in the bottom instead of in your graveyard is because obviously it would just stack upon itself pretty crazy. But yeah, I mean, at some point your deck has to be a mix of cards that fuel Delve and Delve cards. A deck of Delve cards just ends up with a deck of a bunch of expensive spells in it. So
exactly. If you're going to Delve something, you want it to impact the game, like Empty the Pits. You want to be worth something like that, a removal spell. You know, this is not doing it. You'd rather, if you're going to do anything, you're going to do the one that draws you three cards.
It's almost like this would get cast in like a Jeskai control type deck where like you're just delving. You're not like fueling the Delve with putting stuff in your graveyard. You're just like playing spells over the normal course of a game, and then you Delve just because you've been playing cards all day.
See, I think that's the Empty the Pits role.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, but like for non-black, like, I don't know, maybe as a one of in a Jeskai deck, but it doesn't matter because I don't like its price.
Yeah, it's $3. So, if anything, it's like a legacy combo piece or something random that, you know, we don't give a lot of thought to. Like, that seems more likely for this than to be a big player in Standard.
Yeah.
But I mean, it definitely is a non-bow with the Delve stuff. So like, even considering it for that kind of stuff, it happens to have Delve, but it's not going to run in a Delve deck.
Right. All right. Dragon Throne, bulk.
Yep, bulk. You said in foils, you should pick up foils. Man.
This is a promo too.
Yeah, well, so is Rabblemaster. Like, I don't know. The fact that Rabblemaster is a 4-of and this will be like a 1-of, I think this goes in a lot of EDH decks because it just turns your biggest dude into a Crater Hoof. But, yeah, like, it could be bulk.
You guys are killing me. You guys are killing me today.
Sorry, Corbin. You kill us every fucking week.
I know. It's just, I guess I just don't have as much, like, hope as you guys, I think is what it is.
Have you played EDH ever? Dragon Throne's retarded in EDH.
Yeah, I play EDH, and people kill each other. Nobody turtles around with things that cost 9 mana before they do anything. People just kill each other with combos.
You've never attacked with creatures?
Very rarely, unless it's infinite amount.
What about Dragon-style twins? I like the card, but it's bulk, right?
Oh, this is the combo, man.
Yeah, you can kill somebody for give it +6/+6 and hit them.
Distortion strike into.
You saw the standard card, right, Marcel?
It's like grow monstrous or something like
become,
that. +6/+6
Ready.
Oh.
Yeah, so it gives it +6. Uncommon. Yeah, and it turns it into a 10/10 double striker on turn 6.
Oh yeah, there's no way in hell Wizards would create this combo and it being any good in standard.
That's right. All right, next one. This is a cool card, right? Dune Blast. 4 colorless and then Abzan mana. Destroy all but one creature of your choice.
It's powerful. It actually is very powerful if you had just a very controlled deck and that's all you had. But
so I think I actually think that this could see some sideboard play. And like, if you think back to the last Pro Tour, which, you know, I base a lot of, you know, the next year's standard on, and with good reasons, that's how it's been in the past. Those bug mirrors would last all day long. With people having Prognostic Sphinxes all over the place, right? And, I mean, those decks run carry added. They go forever. Like, having a single white mana for those decks on turn 7 or later would not be a problem. I could actually see this as a sideboard card that basically ends that matchup if you wipe the board but keep your Sphinx. Like, that's probably – or you have this, like, you know, the real heavy control deck.
That's 4 colors when you talk about adding this to the Sphinx. Doomblast.
It's true, but, like, it's 4 colors on turn 7 later in a carry added Corsair deck.
I don't think you're going to see decks playing the 4 colors until you get the next set of fetches.
I mean, maybe. I think that those decks can handle one or two ways to make white mana for one or two sideboard cards that blow open the mirror.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
The deck runs 4 carry addeds that never die.
Yeah. You got a point. Yeah. You got a point. So this could be a $1 to $2 card, maybe later on down the line, but it's going to be bulk. Yeah. It's going to be bulk first.
Yeah, I think it's for sure, like, probably going to be bulk, but it may still see a little play, sideboard play, but still be bulk.
Yeah, it's super powerful, so you
can't... for EDH are on a buck or two.
Yeah, I like that card in EDH.
It's nutty in EDH, yeah. Like, Cataclysm's, you know, a real card in EDH.
This card is sweet.
It's not quite Cataclysm, because you're not, like, you know, they get all their artifacts, but, I mean, you're keeping all your equipment and stuff like that, if that's what you're doing. So, yeah, I could see this being real stupid.
All right, next one. Now, this will surely be a standard playable card. End Hostilities. 5-mana Wrath, destroy all creatures and all permanents attached to creatures.
All bestowed stuff, all equipment, all auras, yeah.
Super relevant against the mono-black decks.
Yeah, I mean, at $3, that seems about right. It should be like $2 to $3 at least. This is the only type of effect you could pretty much get out of this. And it's the only thing you're going to have in standard. If you're going to have a control deck, you're going to want to play some End Hostilities. At some point, you got to wipe the board, and this is the only way to do it.
I don't hate this as a commander card either.
Oh, no, because like people are playing generic Wrath of God and generic Day of Judgment, and like I don't – you know, people are playing Hallowed Burial, and I think this does a lot of stuff that Hallowed Burial doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't get rid of Darksteel Plate, but it gets rid of their Swiftfoot Boots and shit like that, or a big stack of auras. Like there's a lot of good that this does.
Yeah,
foils. You know, it's got a lot of upside. Yeah, foils are probably where you want.
Foils. I think $2-3 seems about right. I mean, freaking Supreme Verdict was only like $3-4, and it's the best Wrath ever printed. So
yeah.
It's not going to be more than that. All right.
Well, I think Supreme Verdict is, you know, is going to be a long term gainer.
Well, absolutely. But
I got 100 copies on Moto.
Nice. Do you have 100 copies of Flying Crane Technique?
Oh, I got zero.
That's a good decision.
That's the number you want.
That's also the only legal number, considering the set isn't out yet. So
why is Ghostfire Blade $2?
Because
it's a plant, man. Eldrazi.
Yeah, it couldn't be for morph creatures.
No, Eldrazi.
I saw a deck. All right, you guys remember? Someone played a deck on beta. This was actually cool. I think it's definitely not tier one, but they were playing Ornithopters with this. They were playing Illusion Angels, Insult Artifacts on top of the Steel. Darksteel Citadels and the Ornithopters and
They're trying to make it work.
They're trying to make it work.
Like Bone Splitter, but narrower. Awesome.
Yeah, but I crushed the deck, and I mean it wasn't that bad. But
so they can't equip it till turn two, which is when they swing with their 2/4 Ornithopter. Okay.
You can play it on turn two.
That's what you can play it on turn one and then equip it on turn two and attack. Nice. Yeah.
Boom. Get there, sure. Ornithopter. Okay. Sure.
It was funny. It's a funny deck.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was interesting. $2? Right. Yeah, it's got to come down from $2, right?
Yeah, bulk. It's a cool limited card, and maybe it's a plant for Eldrazi, or maybe Eldrazi happened to tie in, or maybe they just put it there because, you know, morph creatures are unlimited.
So I like this next one, the Grim Haruspex. But I don't know. Like, you do this in the Mardu deck where you got all the tokens. Oh, wait, you sacrifice a non-token creature. Yeah, so want to use this to sacrifice that guy that comes back, the soldier.
You can't actually. This isn't actually sacrifice anything.
Yeah, but I mean, you got the butcher. The butcher sacrifices everything.
Well, yes, yeah.
Haruspex, it has a lot of potential. A lot of people accuse me of underestimating it. It's a fecundity with feet is what it is, sort of.
Yeah, so. it's a powerful little package. I don't know.
It says draw a card.
Yeah, but it's like, do you really want to play this card though?
Go to Painseer and Blood Scrivener.
No. Yeah. I'm pretty sure this is not in fact a constructed card.
Yeah.
Cool limited card though.
Hardened Scales, like. Yeah, I don't think this. Even the
some
more
people
more,
are all about this card.
Some people think Hardened Scales is going to like impact standard. Like this is obviously a nutty EDH foil. If you can get the foils around five, like absolutely do it.
If you're like, this is a sweet combo piece in EDH.
This is an auto include in like in a lot of decks.
But in standard, man, if your heroic deck needs Hardened Scales, like your heroic deck isn't good enough.
And you got the Outlast deck. This helps. I don't think you want it in there because you want a mass quantity of creatures, and then you got your Johnny's giving, you know, the have the non creatures and creature spells there and give the counters. I just don't think you want to play this. This is not going to.
You can't. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just not going to be able to do what you want it to.
It's just to do nothing, man. It's just to do nothing. Like.
But it's so, but you being able to outlast and they get two counters for that is pretty nutty. Like all of a sudden the Johnny, you minus a Johnny and then you get two counters on all your creatures. You got the green white of Johnny.
Unless,
and then all of a sudden you're giving, you know, three creatures, six. I think there is some upside to it. Like I've been looking at it like, damn, I might have to, you know, bite my tongue and really admit that I was wrong about this card, but. Like, I just don't think it is going to fit in. It's like, you don't want to have it because it's a do-nothing, like you're saying.
Yeah, if you have three creatures and a Johnny, you don't need Hardened Scales. You need, one, you probably don't have three creatures because you played a Hardened Scales instead of another creature.
Yeah.
But also, maybe you just need something to protect your creatures. Like, it's just a win more. Like, it's not good.
Yeah, I like it, and I don't like it in Standard.
Yeah.
So, right. Like, I don't think you want non-foils of this.
Yeah, I think it'll be bulk. Herald of Anafenza.
Ugh.
Here's your Outlast card, 1 mana, 1/2.
Yep.
When you activate its Outlast ability, put a 1/1 warrior token on the battlefield.
Yep.
I don't. So
when you activate its Outlast ability, it's your turn because they couldn't make it good and make it so you could do it as an instant.
And then you get a 1/1.
Yep, I think this is going to be a player in the Outlast. If there's an Outlast deck, this is going to be a player in the Outlast deck. There is a grindy card. And once you get going, if you do it twice, like it's grindy and it's one. Like I don't think it's a super powerful, but it's going to be played. If there's an Outlast deck, it's going to be played in the Outlast deck. This will be one of the players of it.
Why would there be an Outlast deck?
Exactly.
Because I'm telling you, you got the First Striker and you got the Flyer. There's an Outlast deck.
So if there's an Outlast deck, it's because you're taking advantage of cards that have if this has the 1/1 counter on it ability.
Correct.
And not the Outlast ability.
Correct.
So it's not even like I understand what I don't think the Outlast deck wants to activate Outlast.
No,
I think
it
wants.
It really does.
Then what does this one do? Nothing.
But it's a one drop. So when it gets there, eventually you'll get there. And if you're adding counters, like a Johnny, using a Johnny to add counters, you get another creature that adds more counters to it. So this is like another body to add to it.
You don't get anything from this by putting counters on it. You have to pay 3 mana. You're paying to get a 1/1.
You're paying 3 mana, you get a 1/1, and then you activate a Johnny all of a sudden. Now you got another body that you're adding to counter. It just multiplies.
Okay.
I think this card at a dollar, I think, is definitely going to be at least $1.
I'm going to call bulk.
Yeah. There's going to be so much bulk. Like we always call way too few cards bulk rares. And this is not one I'm prepared not to call a bulk.
This is definitely not a bulk, and I'll say that.
All right.
Okay. Right.
And another card I don't think is bulk is this next one, the High Sentinels of Ashran, because of the Outlast deck. Yeah, it costs 4 to give it another counter to a target creature, and you're not going to play that ever.
This is the first. I think this is the first one of this Outlast deck or whatever that I actually like, because I think this is one where you actually could activate the ability because you could do it at instant speed. Plus, it's a 3/4 flyer for 4 that will actually be really big if you just happen to play it in a deck with a Johnny or other, like, with a Johnny or whatever else gives counters. You don't have to have Outlast shenanigans going on. You just have to, this card is okay on its own because it's a 3/4 flyer for 4. It has an instant speed ability and it has the potential to be insane.
It'll be very good and limited and it'll be a bulk rare.
Jason. This is not going to be a bulk rare. I think this is Chromeview, your most opportunity to pick up a card for bulk and have it go
you
up.
Fucking, you have not called a single card a bulk rare
so far.
Yes,
I have. I called multiple cards bulk. I called a bunch. This is not a bulk rare. You will eat crow. I'll put Fogo on this.
I wondered when that was coming.
You're going to call every single card in the set Fogo, not a bulk rare. And Fogo, when one Fogo, of them gets is, there, you'd be like, argh.
No, I'll put on this one. I'll put it all down on this one. This is not going to be a bulk rare. This will be at least $2 to $3 Fogo bet. And about,
when?
By the next set.
So when Fate Reforged comes out, the day it releases, High Sentinels of Arashin will be over $1 TCG mid.
Yes. Between then and now, it will be over $1. Yep.
Jason?
I will take that bet.
We got a bet.
For sure.
I like Jason's side of this bet a lot better.
Yeah, me too. I like Jason's side a lot.
All right.
Ford gives me fucking wood. Oh my god. Oh my god.
And that's how you tag your podcast not safe for work.
Oh my god. Okay. Just picturing copying this card with Riku when you trigger Ferocious. Just like,
See, this is Marcel's,
like, it doesn't matter what copy.
Man, Marcel's heroic deck is Jason's EDH. Not everything can, Jason, man, you're gonna have like 100 card EDH decks of nothing but cards from this set. There's other cards that aren't gonna get replaced.
Pick up foils of this.
This card is good. Okay. This card is good.
These are all in decks I own. Like, CD Unwritten is going in Maelstrom Wanderer. Like, Hardened Scales is going in Varel, and this is going in Riku. Like, I'm not just making shit up.
No, I'm with you. That's like the top three of, like, the 10 that you've named. That's my point.
You know what? They're all going in decks, man. Wheelsies. This card is so good. I love it.
This card is good.
It's one of the best forks they've ever printed.
Yes. Double fork for... Not that hard of an activation.
I wish it actually forked so that you could copy your opponent's spells with it.
Yeah, but I mean.
That would probably be busted.
I don't like non-foils. And I don't like that it's sold out at $1. Like, I don't like non-foils of EDH cards, so.
What do you think of $6 foils?
That's actually probably high.
I think so too.
So that's too bad. They'll come down.
Alright, next one. Icy Blast.
Icy Bulk.
You're
going to lose so many games to this card in Limited. It's not going to be worth any money, but this is just going to rip your deck off in Limited. You're just going to lose to it. You remember Sleep? This is like
exactly
Gridlock one game.
Well, Sudden Storm was good. Like, these are always good.
Like, this is a better Gridlock, and Gridlock was winning games. So, like, Icy Blast is going to ruin your life in Limited, but that doesn't mean it'll be more than a bulk rare.
Yeah. All right, next one. Ivory Tusk Fortress.
Bulk.
5/5. Untap each creature you control with a 1/1 counter on a journey each other plays on top step.
Marcel, what about the Outlast deck?
They don't want this. They don't want to play it. To tell you, they don't want to play black.
I agree with you.
They want to do, David's mostly white with a splash of green.
I think I'd rather just play a card named Prophet of Crucifix than if I want to untap my guys. Sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
All right. Next one. Jeering Instigator.
This card.
Turn face up, you can threaten a creature. This could be a player in a mono red deck.
Exactly.
Is it a better threaten than the actual, like, threaten effects we have available, including one that has Strive? I don't know.
I think 6 mana to threaten.
I mean, the difference is, you know, it also attacks for 2.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, you want to play this with Rabble Master in a mono red deck.
Yeah, it is a goblin. I don't know if it's better than, like, the Strive Threaten, since when you want to threaten stuff, it's usually in the game and you can actually take 2 creatures. I don't know. It's bulk, I'm sure, but it might see some.
Yeah, I don't think it's bulk. It's going to be played in the mono red deck, so it's not going to be bulk. It's going to be a 4 of in that deck, or at least a 3 of. So it'll be $1. It's going to be $1.
Okay.
How do you pick which one of Marcel's insane statements you make a FOGO bet on?
I liked the one you made a bet on. But I think you've made some insane statements too. And I'm probably surely have poo-pooed a card that's going to, like, be worth money. So
you're not going to play this? All right, whatever. Let's go to the next one.
No, I think you play it. But, like, it is a goblin. I mean, that's a thing. It just kind of depends if mono red is good. More goblin, like.
You mean if mono red stays good?
It's going to be good at first, so it's going to hold its price for at first, and then it could drop down later.
Yeah. Well, okay. All right. Next one, Jeskai Ascendancy.
Into bulk.
Yeah, there are some ascendancies I like, and this is not among them.
Next one, Karu Lich Lord. This is Soul Tie, right? Did I get that right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, this is bulk. Another one.
Oh, this is another one, but okay. I'm going to be Ryan for a second. Guys, it says graveyard on it.
Yeah, they don't want to play that.
Graveyard theme.
Marcel's got a graveyard theme.
I know, but you can't control what you're doing with it. It costs
But it's got a graveyard theme.
Okay, it's graveyard of bulk. Bulk in the graveyard. Get the fuck out of here.
All right.
Graveyard theme.
All right.
Karus Spell Snatcher. That's spell snatching some more bulk prices.
I like Nagas, man. Nagas a cool creature type.
Yeah, I guess. Doesn't save it from being a bulk card. So.
Well, I got no Merfolk, so it's the closest I'm going to get. All right. Now, here's one that a lot of people are excited about. It's a big throwback. Mantis Rider. I'm going to get this. Jeskai Colors.
Yep.
3/3, Flying Vigilance Haste. It's the Lightning Angel throwback. It's $2.
This card's really, really good. I was a little down on it till I played against it, and it's just a pain in the ass. This card's good. $2 is definitely, I think, about its price. It could probably be it's a $2 to $3 card. The problem is I try to build like a Jeskai like tempo deck and it doesn't have the early creatures really, or it just
wouldn't expect it.
Yeah, it seems like you want to play this and some other cards, but like this is where the top of the curve, this is where the curve starts in creatures.
Yeah, I think this card's good, like the stats on it are good and all of that. Do I actually think it's going to do a lot in standard? No, because it's one of those cards that is infinitely worse if you don't cast it on turn three.
No, it's not that bad later on in the game.
It's a lot worse. Every turn you give your opponent to get closer to their Prognostic Sphinx, this card gets a whole lot worse.
Are we talking about Manus Rider still?
No, now we're talking about Mardu Ascendancy. Because it's a combo, Jason.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm
telling you. No, Jacob Van Loon already broke this card.
Turn three, modern kill with Doran.
I like two of the Ascendancies, and this is one of the three I don't like.
This is the one I think is going to be a player in standard with the Butcher and that deck. Because this with the Butcher is already a built-in combo. It attacks, you got a creature. It's like it feeds itself.
So if you were to play the blood gas guy, you know, whatever that guy's called, you play this on three, your Butcher on four, sack your blood gas guy to give it haste, and then you immediately get a goblin.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll see. I think you can't play more than one or two of them.
I think two to three, possibly. I don't think
it's just a lot of, yeah, eventually you just have too many.
The other thing it does do, it saves your tokens from Anger of the Gods, which I found out the hard way after I casted Anger of the Gods. So that alone is another factor into it, that it helps those token decks, gives it some legs. So I definitely think it's got some play.
I could see this.
That's a good call, because Anger of the Gods is one of those cards I'm really picking up aggressively right now.
I do think this could be a card. I mean, it's just so like, and I think it's really good for saving your things, and I think that you can, in this deck, it's really good. The problem is, like, if somebody just kills your Butcher, if they just Heroes Downfall your Butcher, then you've got a couple tokens and a Mardu Ascendancy, and
you gotta find extra redundancy.
Courser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The deck is screaming for Sam Black to break it, and there's gonna be more. You also have that, what's that one guy? He's very slow and I didn't like him, but he could return from the graveyard. You could sacrifice a creature to do two damage to a player. He's like black red. Like there's going to be some kind of deck with this, and it's going to take some
Timuret, I believe is what you're talking about.
Yeah, Timuret, the Murder King. Yeah, the Murder King, him. So like, but I don't like him. He was way too slow in the deck, but
it all just seems worse than playing Courser. But
it's a different deck. People are going to play different colors. People are not just going to play Courser, and eventually Courser is going to get figured out, and there's going to be a deck that's going to take over Courser. As people start playing Courser, they're going to probably play Ankle Biter to run through Courser with all the tokens.
Well, they're
going to
play, what is it? Is Abzan's Charm the one that can kill Courser? Because that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Whichever of the charms kills Courser, that's the one that's going to get played a lot.
I mean, Courser is going to be, Courser Caryatid is going to be the basis of what Standard is going to be built on. Eventually, people are going to figure out how to take care of Courser and Caryatid decks. This is going to be a Standard evolution. So, you know, when people want to play Mardu, this is going to be a card in the Mardu deck.
Yeah.
That's pretty much that. And especially when you get the sacrifices, like that's just a powerful engine. Ask Sam Black about Zombie Bombardment. If you can sacrifice stuff for free, you get free upside, there's got to be some good stuff going on. All right, Master of the Pearls. Master of the Bulk?
Bulk. Meandering Tower Shell? It'll be Bulk in three turns when it actually attacks.
Boost Cube was saying something about him with a Whip of Erebos. Because then you could attack and bring it back.
It never gets to attack. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, this would work with Whip. That does not make this card worth playing, but it would work with Whip, similar to how Obsidat did.
I would invest heavily in this card because it works so good with Whip.
Hey, it's Bulk Rare, man. It can't go down. Next one, Mind Swipe. Now, if you're talking about Madness Rider deck, this is probably, that's like the only deck that would want this card. Counter target spell unless the controller pays X. It deals X damage to that spell's controller. This will be Bulk.
Yeah, but it definitely wants to be in that deck. It might be a dollar.
It's a cool card, man, but Render Silence is Bulk Rare too. And that was an even cooler counter
spell.
But this
does damage. This does damage and counter spell. Like, this is like when you're in that deck. And
even if they pay the mana and the spell doesn't get countered, it still deals damage.
Maybe this is okay, if we're going to entertain the thought on this, maybe it's like Modern Delver.
Yeah, definitely in a Delver. You want this in a blue-red Delver.
You pay, like, when you're on four, Well, like when you're on three, your force spike will usually get them. But then when you're like on four, you know, pain, like whatever they're doing on turn four, you can likely counter and you get some free damage in. Like that's the deck, the Delver, like, and then Burn the Mount deck that would want this. But I don't think that deck's going to exist in Standard, at least not for a while.
You got Mantis Rider. The Mantis Rider deck wants to play this. The Mantis Rider deck wants this, at least a two of this in the
you
Mantis Rider.
I just don't think the Mantis Rider deck's going to exist.
It's going to exist. Mantis Rider is going to be built on Mantis Rider because Mantis Rider is going to a linchpin of that deck and is that powerful of a card. I don't know how good it's going to be or if it's going to have to wait till the next set before it becomes something, but it will be a player in Standard at some point. Mantis Rider is just that good of a card.
All right. Necropolis Fiend, throw bulky.
Bulk.
Yeah. Fluta Delta. Wait. We're not talking about this card.
Bulk. Rakshasa Death Dealer. Sold out at $2.
I think it's bulk.
So good.
Calling bulk.
Yeah.
Bulk?
Yeah.
It's so good.
You leave up a lot of mana to get a 4/4.
Yeah, it's a lot of, it's an investment.
Why not just pay 4 mana for a 4/4, or better yet, 4 mana for a 5/5, instead of paying 2 mana and then
yeah,
have to keep up 2 mana the whole game?
Yeah, you know what card sucked dick? Putrid Leech.
Okay, how much mana did Putrid Leech cost to make into a 4/4?
I'm just saying, man, Pump Knights have
oh, it was zero. It was zero, that's right.
Yeah, I see it being bulk. I just don't see it. I mean, there's potential, there's upside. I think it's bulk. Yeah.
I don't know.
Tell me, Jason. Okay. Sell me. How is it going to work out?
It's going to be so good. Look at it.
Tell me the sequence. How is it going to be good? Just tell
turn
me.
One, you play a land, right? Turn two, you play a land and this. Turn three, you go and stomp them.
Because they don't
with
block.
Your mana.
So they don't block.
If they block, you pump.
And then you die.
But if they don't block, then all of a sudden you do 2 damage, or you can pump to do 4, and then you give up your turn.
Yes.
And then the next turn, you're going to do
it's
same?
It's just like Putrid Leech, right? You attack
yeah,
them for 4,
gonna be,
right?
Yeah, but they're going to be playing Mantis Rider, remember, Marcel?
Oh.
They're going to be playing that turn 3 Mantis Rider.
Mantis Rider looks a hell of a lot better than this card.
Yeah, a lot better.
Mantis this is going to deal so much death.
Okay.
And I don't know. I don't like many cards in the set. I like this card.
Are you okay. I think people look at it and think Putrid Leech and miss the most important part of Putrid Leech in that it costs 0 mana to pump. So it was just always a 4/4.
Yep.
All right. Next one. Rakshasa Vizier.
Bulk.
Seems real bulky. Rattleclaw Mystic. Now here's one people were talking about. You know, this is one of the first cards we had spoiled. You can play it on turn 2 as, you know, a team or bird, or you can like, if you want to do the morph and then unmorph it on turn 4, it'll take you to 6 mana to cast your green mythic that looks at the top 7.
I mean, if you're not doing that, then what you've got is like a slight upgrade on Druid the Anima. If you're not going to do the morph shenanigans, and like I don't think I want to be morphing stuff when there's so many ways to deal 2 damage to a creature.
Yeah, I think that very 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 few of the morph cards are going to make it in Constructed, man.
You got like, 3 of them.
You're just like, going to spend your turn doing this.
Why would you not just play Sylvan Caryatid?
Exactly.
No, because it attacks. If you're playing a teamer deck, you would play this over Caryatid because Caryatid is a defensive card. Whereas this, you could attack with it. In the teamer deck, you want to. I mean, $5 is a little high, but in the teamer deck, this is going to be a 4 of because you want that acceleration. If it's in the curve, it attacks. It does what you want to do. It can, in a pinch, you can morph it and then get the 6.
So Marcel, in your like vision of Standard, do you think that each of the 5 wedges is going to have its own distinct competitive deck?
At some point in Standard, yes. Depends the ebb and flow of when each color will be having a standard deck. It depends on what cards are out.
Mm-hmm.
I do think Teamer is going to be part of the first wave of tier 1 decks. Is absent. I think it's absent first, Teamer second, and then you got somewhere down the line Mardu and maybe.
But you don't. You don't think Sultai, the deck that actually existed and dominated the last Pro Tour, is gonna the block Pro Tour is gonna be like. I want to believe you, man, but that deck was just so good at the Pro Tour and all the big pros were playing it because it was so much better. And now they get like a good charm and all this stuff and they get fetch lands to play with their Courser and like, I mean, everything else just seems worse.
Serene Senhar?
Yeah.
He posted the deck. It was basically the bug control deck and I've been playing with it basically all day today. And it was a great, it's a good deck. It's a solid deck. And yes, the Prognosis Fink is a 3 of in there. And it plays so good, but at the same time, like this teamer deck is in the meta, the beta meta, and it's a powerful deck, and it overruns it overrun the control deck. Like I would lose to this deck. It's like you got to play against it strongly because they got four drops and they're coming out, and then they got Sarkhan, they got Palookernos, and they got the dragon, the Stormbreath dragon. Like they're
playing
so much
mana
damage.
Dudes that die. Like that's how they get there. Part of their plan is playing a vulnerable mana dude.
You're not going to spend the. I mean, I'm telling you.
Well, those bug decks didn't necessarily play a lot of things to kill a mana dude. What they did do was just, you know, kill the dragons, and then they would just play their sphinxes, and they would just have all the cards. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I just see. I look at the two top decks from the last Pro Tour, which is the red green Elspeth deck and the Sultai mid range deck, and both of those get a lot better. And it's just hard to see. And then when you add in, you know, the usual suspects like mono black, mono red, like it is just really hard to see these cards that didn't have much before the new set are just going to get there off a couple cards. Like I'm pretty sure
Red Green Monsters is going to become the teamer deck. That's basically what
Red Green Monsters was already playing white to play Elspeth. Like you think the teamer cards are playing them better than playing Elspeth?
Yes. I think they're going to be playing teamer. They're going to move.
Okay, do we want to spend $5 on Rattleclaw Mystic? Because anybody listening to this podcast cares about.
Oh, like, everyone wants to talk about new standard, man. Everyone at home's doing the same thing we are.
The teamer deck's going to play this card. It could probably hold 3 to 4 for a little while.
All right. It's a promo as well, right?
Oh, it is?
It's the buy a box.
Buy a box. So that's not super impactful.
So $3 card.
I do think it will be played well, especially after Carry Added leaves. This card is probably pretty nutty. Or if you really want a deck that doesn't want to go from 2 to 4, you know, which a lot of decks do because they want to play their courser and then lay a land. If you're the deck that wants to go from 4 to 6, you know, this is real good. So I think it's possible they go in different decks or the same deck. But
okay, Retribution of the Ancients.
Bulk.
Sage of the Inward Bulk.
I'm going to go ahead and say Bulk.
Sagu Bulk Mauler.
No. This guy is not.
I knew Marcel was going to like it.
I know. Again, this fits in
the teamer deck, right?
Yep, fits in the teamer deck. This card is hard to deal with. The Hex
Brew. It is hard to deal with.
And Trample. 6/6 body, and because there's a lot of 4/5s, there's going to be 5/5s at the top of the curve. 6/6 beats them all.
This is one of the first things the first morphs I've seen that I think has power.
I don't think
power.
You need to morph him at all. I think you just play him as a Simic Sky Swallower.
Yeah, or you can morph
him. Well, this is your turn 4 play out of your teamer deck with your Rattleclaw Mystic.
Yeah, you could play this as a turn 4, or if you got, cause I played against the deck, the teamer could either have this as the Rattleclaw flipped over, or this one. Now all of a sudden you're lightning bolting the Rattleclaw instead of lightning bolting this guy. So it creates this thing. If you got the hooded, Hydra as well, all of a sudden you don't know which of those three you're going to be playing. So there's potential for that. This card is very powerful.
I would agree with you there. Like it can, you think about the ways that people would deal with it. If you just cast this on turn 4 or turn 5 even, you cannot chump block it with Elspeth. You can minus your Elspeth to kill it. So there's that.
Yeah.
But you have to get to so that's probably the thing that happens the most often to this card. But against everything that isn't Elspeth, this card is, pretty crazy. And if, you know, they plus their Elspeth and then you unmorph this and you get a trample over their guys so that the Elspeth can't minus, then it's probably unbeatable. So like, I do see some upside to this card simply because it's so big and has nice keywords on it.
Play a Miser's Boa Manalia, and all of a sudden this card becomes insane.
Buck 25 on Sagu Mauler.
Yeah, I think it's like a $2-$3 card. Yep.
I think that this is a card. If the Pro Tour was in such a way where like one side of the room's playing Elspeth because you know it's Elspeth, and the other side is looking for a way to beat Elspeth, and they decide for whatever reason this is better than Scuttling Doom Engine, it could spike really hard. At $1 right now, it's probably a pretty safe trade target for this weekend because that potential is there. That said, I think it will eventually be bulk.
I don't think it'll be bulk. I think training it out for $1, it'll make be a very smart move for you.
Okay. All right, next one, real card.
$6 on Savage Knuckleblade, sold out at 6.
Overpriced, but good.
I think that's about right. It's a $5 card at least.
It's at least $5 in the short term. Like it could come down just because it's a non-mythic, but man, I really like this card a lot. It's a 4-of in the deck it's in.
Yeah, it's premier. Yeah, exactly. It's a 4-of and in this deck, it's premier teamer card. There's just so much good going on with this card. It's like,
This card is very good.
It's a threat that you stick and then protect. and just get there. Like, it's got so many ways to protect itself. It's got haste, so if you bounce it, you can replay it and have it get right back to fighting.
Yeah, what's nuts is when you go turn two mana dork, turn three, play this and give it haste.
Yeah.
This card I do think is very good. That doesn't, you know, that said, it doesn't necessarily mean that a deck playing this card will do well in the meta.
It will.
You know, the card itself is very good, but it may just not have the pieces. It may be, that deck may be 12 cards short right now, you know? But like the power level on this card is certainly high enough that people will be trying to find ways to play it for the next 18 months that it's legal.
And this will be played for the next 18 months as well is going to be Siege Rhino.
Oh, it's such a good card.
At $5, I think this is the right price. It's like 4 to 5. But yeah, you're going to want to play a few creatures in your Abzan mid-range control deck, and you want to play this card.
All right, sell me on why this is better than Pelucranos.
The reason why is because of the life, the taking away.
I mean, but how much does the life matter when they just attack with their Pelucranos and kill
your
guy?
Yeah, but you got so much removal that, like, Pelucranos doesn't stick around. You got
Corbin, you didn't play Magic when people were playing Loxodon and Hierarch.
Yes, however, Magic's creatures have come a long way since Loxodon and Hierarch.
Yeah, Pelucranos is the biggest guy on the field, but once you get rid of Pelucranos, which is easy to do for this deck to do, this guy is the second biggest guy on the field. And you know, all those four guys, like the teamer guy, he just stomps right through the teamer guy. He's blocking all those bears, the 4/4 bears, like that 5 toughness is.
What 4/4? Are you talking about the 6/6 Savage Knuckleblade?
Yeah, the Knuckleblade's a 6/6.
I see what you're saying.
I
don't know. There's a lot of 4 drops.
There is a lot of 4 drops.
The power on this card is very high. And the deck I see it being in is, if you're right, if this Abzan, like, mid-range 2 control deck exists, then it's good in that deck. I think it may be better than Pelucranos in that deck, but it's certainly not better than Pelucranos in, you know, like the decks that are playing Pelucranos now. So I think it's like the place in which it fits is kind of limited. So I think $5 may be a little overpriced. I think it's maybe like one of those like somewhere between $2 and $4 cards where it's played and it's good, but it's only one deck that isn't a dominant deck.
I think it's 4 to 5. I think Abzan is going to be one of the most dominant deck from cons in the new set.
I hope so. That's my favorite wedge. Okay, I'm with you. I mean, the power level on this card is very high.
Sultai Ascendancy. I'm more down on this card, even though it's still very powerful, but yeah, I think it might be bulk.
Call him bulk.
It's still very powerful. I think Dredge or Delve or the graveyard deck is not gonna happen this time. It's gonna probably be after we get some more cards, and once it does, Sultai Ascendancy has a place, but not until then.
Okay.
I like it in, Mimeoplasm deck or something like that. Like, I think this does a lot of work in card selection, and I think it fills up your yard pretty good. So there are going to be some EDH decks that want this. In terms of playability, this is one of 2 ascendancies I like, but I don't like non-foils.
Yeah, I like this in EDH as well. I think you're right. Because you look at it in standard, and it's just like a real do-nothing, very slow. We talked about it before, but in EDH, you can actually play cards like that.
Yeah, it's like a mini Miri's Guile, plus it's fueling your Mimeoplasm. So like all the bug color deck, maybe not Damia, but like definitely Mimeoplasm. So it's a little bit narrow, and I don't like the non-foils again, but the next ascendancy, Teamer Ascendancy, is the other one I like in EDH. Especially in a deck like Animar, I think you're going to draw just a million cards off of this.
I think this, and Commander. What about Standard? I think this has the most potential in Standard.
I think it has potential, yeah, because the draw. And the teamer deck.
I mean, the haste is, you play this on turn 3, or you turn 2 if you have the right land and an Elvish Mystic or whatever. But like, it's the one that, it's less of a do nothing because the haste is relevant, especially against control decks. And the fact that it actually replaces itself is solid. I think in whatever, you know, in these decks against the control decks, this does 2 abilities you want, so.
Yeah, but I think it's a sideboard card probably against those decks.
Probably. Because I don't know. Fires of Yavimaya was obviously insane back in the day. This is different than that, but similar, so. It's a dollar right now.
You gotta remember, Sylvan Caryat Courser is taking up 8 slots on most of these green decks, and all of a sudden you got a lot less playability of what cards can actually make there. Then all of a sudden you throw in Stormcleft, Pelucranos, maybe another Mana Guy, all of a sudden you got a lot less cards and then a lot less room for these enchantments. Yeah, so like the card, so your cards that are non creatures are going to have to be very impactful. So yeah, like
so you guys don't like not the non foils either.
Yeah. No.
I like foils under five. That's
I will say this about the non-foils. I think if any of these ascendancies are really going to have an effect in the first couple weeks of standard, it's probably this one. So if there's upside on any of the non-foils, it's this one.
Yeah, I can see that. Is this a Mardu ascendancy? But yeah, like this has, if you figure out a good deck with this, like you're going to be doing some things.
All right. 1,000 wins. Bulky. Oh,
yep. Bulk.
1,000 farts.
They were terrified to make this card good.
Trial like, of Mystery.
For 7 mana, you'd think you could bounce everything.
Yeah.
All right. Trail of Mystery.
Bulk, but.
Potential, but like, I'm not gonna bank on it. Like, it's just really weird. it's really suspicious tech.
It's like, if you get the, you need more morph creatures, so as they got more morph creatures, maybe out the other sets, this card could probably do something. All of a sudden, all your morphs are Borderland Rangers, and then you got a morph deck and people don't know what you're playing, and you get more mana to cast your morphs at these insane costs. It's like, this card being good relies upon the morphs in the format being good. I don't think there's a critical mass of good morphs. You got like three so far that are, can see standard play, maybe the Phoenix. So all of a sudden, maybe four that fits into this color, this like teamer morph deck. But it needs some more players for it to be, for this to be anything.
This doesn't get, I don't think this gets warranted a spot. Like, I just,
Sure doesn't walk carry out. It's legal. Maybe nope. Next year.
Maybe next year.
Yeah.
Trap Essence.
Bulk.
This would be bulk if it said counter target spell, but it doesn't. It says counter target creature spell.
So it's super.
The only thing this has going for it is they didn't word it that you had to put counters on a creature to play it.
Yeah.
Like, it says up to one creature. That's, like, the only thing it's got going for it. Like, it could be worse if it were templated worse.
Yeah, they got Teemer Charm. Teemer Charm is going to be played over this because that's a mana leak. So, yeah, they got to play
anything. And the other guy, the ferocious Swipe. Spike that turns into a hard counter.
Yeah, that's a non-creature. Or yeah, instant or sorcery or non-creature. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so they'll play Teemer Charm. They'll play three Teemer Charms before they even see one of these cards at all in that deck.
And the Trap Essence is unplayable.
The utter end of the rares is utter end.
I think $6 is too high for this card. I think
we said the same thing. We said the same thing about $5 Hero's Downfall and it went to 10. That said, I'm still inclined to agree that this is not more than $6 long term.
Just because there's going to be more of this set opened and it's a non-mythic.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You know, we say that, like, and for the next 3 months, that's certainly true. A year from now, that won't be true. At least not in terms of drafting, you know, like, so we'll see.
Do you guys think Utter End could hit $10? Do we think it could hit $10?
I think it could hit, no. Not with Heroes Downfall also in the format, no.
Yeah, you're going to play more Heroes Downfall before you play Utter's End, and, yeah, I mean, it's a good
Heroes
card.
Heroes Downfall did its thing, like, and it was able to go, you know, and it's like $7 right now, but it was able to hit that $10, actually it hit 15 for like a minute, because it was the only card that did this. You know, like, they kind of pulled each other back a little. Maybe it's a year from now, it's different.
Yeah.
Oh, I lied. That wasn't even the end.
It's not
that was
quite
just the
utter end.
Page.
There's one more card we need to talk about, and I love this card. I just don't know what deck I want it in. Because, like, none of the generals that are in this color in EDH would necessarily want this card, but I really just want to cast this. I don't know where I'll be casting it, so it's just one of those amazing orphans.
Oh, this is like, pretty cool.
It's so cool. I love this card so much, and it just, if it
Villainous Wealth
colors.
Is what we're talking about. Sultai, target player, target opponent, exiles the top X cards of their library. You can cast any number of non-land cards with a converted mana cost X or less from among those cards for free. So this is not, this is pretty nuts, right? Cause it's not even like you have to build around it. It's just like, hey, I'll throw this in my deck cause I'll eventually hit 10 mana cause I'm playing Commander. And then you just like get somebody for 7.
But I think you want a bribery though. Like you want a bribery or you want to, Praetor's Grasp. And Praetor's Grasp isn't $2. So this can't be $2.
It's probably going to be both.
Because Praetor's Grasp is much better. So yeah, like Damia doesn't want this. The Mimeoplasm doesn't really want this. Like, what's the other bug color ones? Like, it's a dragon, right? Yeah. Like, man, I don't know.
No.
A standard doesn't want this. So.
No.
No, probably not. Like, it's just a weird, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So
if it were a reverse Genesis wave, like maybe if it, like you got X cards, X or less, if it was like a reverse Genesis wave, it would be better. You're only getting one card.
No, you cast any number. You cast any number of them.
Yeah.
The more converted mana cost says.
So it is.
X or less.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, so I don't think that's what I thought. Like, that's why I was reading it before and then I read it just now again. Wrong. I don't know. Excuse me. It's 2 a.m.
So there you go.
Any uncommons you guys want to talk about? What do you think what do you think about charms? Which ones are going
good.
To, well, which ones do we think
Teemer
really
is Sultai.
Get there?
But that's the Sultai becomes Sultai. That's the Sultai become, oh, it is. Sultai is going to be part of the Sultai control. The Sultai charm is very powerful for what it does. The Teemer charm, because that mana leak
they're
is
all good.
Yeah. They're all good, but that Teemer charm and that mana leak is.
We're all going to be sitting on the table at the pre-release after people get rid of their draft jam.
Oh yeah, they're certainly probably not relevant financially.
These are free forever. The only thing, Seek the Horizon is going to be a cool looking foil. And Seek the Horizon's a reprint and like the Champions of Kamigawa foil is like 81 cents right now. I could see maybe this one hitting a buck. So I wouldn't spend cash on it, but like if you can trade for it. At like 50 cents or something like that. Like, I think it's a dollar card all day. It just, you could probably get $2 in trade for it. So, it's, yeah, it's pretty. So I would definitely try to, you know, get those in trade if you can.
I think Murderous Cut, which is the delve instant speed destroy target creature. Yeah. I think that's going to be like a $1 to $2 uncommon.
Yeah. That card's guaranteed to be played, especially at first. It could be kind of expensive. And, you know, foils of that stuff, like Azorius Charm, for instance, was, you know, only a standard card, but that foil was $5+ for a while. Just something to keep in mind if it kind of, you know, falls into the same sort of role.
I really like Stubborn Denial, too, as a way to protect, you know, your to keep them from countering to casting a non-creature and getting rid of your Knuckle Blade or your 6-6 or whatever. Like, Stubborn Denial, 4-spike is fine. This is a 4-spike with lots of upside. I really like Stubborn Denial.
All right. So as far as the rares, what are you guys thinking? I'm big again on the Fogobet guy. I think that's a great way to put your money in. And just
that's what I'm going to call him forever is Fogobet guy.
But Bloodsoaked Champion, I think he's going to be very powerful and just a major player throughout most of Standard. Again, all those very good 3-color cards, that whole cycle, the Siege Rhino, the Butcher, Madness Rider, the Teemer, the Knuckle Blade guy, and then which was the last one? I forgot. Just, I guess the fifth one I don't not so high on. But those cards are all just very powerful and
the Sagu Mauler, did you get that one?
What's the Sagu Mauler?
That's the Trample Hexproof 6/6.
Oh that's it. Oh he's that is part of that
it's
cycle.
Not part of that cycle, but that's something you liked.
Yeah.
That's yeah. What I was saying. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Crackling Doom, I wish I'd picked up under 3.
I mean, that's still probably a fine card to trade for this weekend at the pre-release because if it becomes good, if it does well at the Pro Tour, like it could spike to 5 for a couple of weeks. Like, mm-hmm. You know, all bets are off for the first 3-4 weeks the set's out.
I like Howl the Horde a lot.
I think in terms of upside, I think the Sagu Mauler is one. The Crackling Doom is one. Honestly, this set I look at, and I don't know if it's because the format's rotating, so we don't know what's going to happen or what, but I don't see as much as I usually do in terms of liking stuff. And it may just because, you know, we know so much money is going to go to the fetch lands or what, but...
Or because we, like, look back at Journey into Nyx, and we're like, yeah, we liked all these cards, and it's like, there's one non-mythic over, like, $2.
Yeah.
So it's like everything's going to be bulk. So much of this set's going to be bulk and more this set than most sets just because it's going to be open so much.
Yeah. I mean, I think your opportunity to make money on any cards in this set comes in either the first month or it comes, you know, maybe a year down the road at rotation. And after that, it comes 3-4 years down the road with the long-term stuff. You know, like there's very little, unless, you know, something's just completely underlooked, that will be worth more 6 months from now than it is now.
I'm still big on Sarkhan, and I think Soren is still going to be one of the other top cards of the set. Definitely in the top five. So I'll say that. So like, don't undervalue. I still think Soren is going to be a player. And I do want to see the Unwritten. That card is just so nuts and so good. And Empty the Pits as well. So like, these cards are, you know, there's going to be some kind of other mythics. There's not a whole lot of mythics that are going to hold it that well. So
I do think See the Unwritten too is one that could break out.
Yeah.
You know, and I know $5 is, you know, probably more than we like right now. But like, if a deck at the Pro Tour plays See the Unwritten, it's going to be a See the Unwritten deck. You know, it's going to carry all the hype behind it. And, you know, at that point, it's probably going to double up to at least $10 for, you know, a week or two after that. So I think that there's upside there because it's such a powerful effect that nobody's, you know, really got with. But, you know, maybe a team at the Pro Tour shows up with it and it goes crazy.
So there we go. Set review. We knocked it out. I hope you guys like this one compared to other ones with the light crew. Do we want to do any questions? Got a whole bunch of questions on the docket.
I mean, maybe we could do one or two, because
two hours.
Oh yeah. How about we say
like an hour and a half?
Well, yeah.
Yes. We started at 11:35. We're at an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah. How about we save these questions that everyone asked, and we'll save it for the next show so we can have a lot of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, guys, everybody asked questions on Twitter and who responded to me. I think we're going to try to answer those because those are kind of long-term existential questions, I think, a lot of them. You know, some of them are like, oh, what should I do with boxes? But for the most part, I think that's stuff that can keep for a week, so we'll probably get to that a little later.
So yeah, plus Ryan will be back, so you want to hear the talent's official opinion. So tune in next week for more Brainstorm Brewery when we bring you episode 115.
Again?
Yeah.
Ah, you got wrecked again.
Did that on purpose. Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com. CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.